Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
My lord, the ship appears to be deserted.
How can that be? They're hiding.
Yes, sir. But the bridge seems to be run by computer. It is the only thing speaking.
Speaking? Let me hear.
9, 8, 7, 6. Five.
Get out!
Three.
Get out of there! Get out!
One.
Hello. Hello. Hello, Dan. Hello,
Hello.
Jesse. Hello.
When do I get paid off?
Welcome to episode 191.
Man.
100 is fine and fun.
191 of the
It's Fine and Fun.
Of the It's Got Star Trek 100 podcast.
100 and Blinding Sun.
And this podcast.
Incredible machine.
Yes, we'll get to that. This podcast, on this episode, we are going to be conducting part two of our two-part discussion of Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. If you would like to hear part one, and I highly recommend it.
Yeah, if you're going to listen to part two, why wouldn't you, you psycho?
Yeah, it's a little off.
I mean, they're not necessarily psychopaths. They could have some other mental disorder that causes them to do this. Or maybe they're just carefree and bohemian. Might be
deep
like
emotional problems.
Yes. To your planet, that, welcome.
That can be too. Yeah.
Okay, so that's going to be our plan for the discussion this week.
Your planet, welcome.
I do want to briefly note that, yes, we are slowly creeping up on episode 200 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. And in preparation for that, we are hoping to have listeners send in emails, audio clips,
Pictures,
whatever you want. You can send things to feedback@itsgotstartrek.com if you want to send anything celebratory, if you
want to
send
me
hateful comments, I don't know, whatever you want to send. So emails, whatever you want to send our way, because on the 200th episode, we'll put together a fun extravaganza episode where we play a bunch of tapes, have some discussions, look back on our 200 episodes of this now venerable, once plucky, now venerable podcast, the It's Got Star Trek podcast, thoroughly embedded into the Star Trek podcast environment, ecosystem. Okay, so on to the conclusion of our discussion of Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
Why did you do that?
All right, let's talk about the Enterprise, because the Enterprise, it goes without saying, is one of the key characters in all of Star Trek, all the variations of the Enterprise. But this is nominally, in a literary sense, the original.
For real.
The model may be different, but it is the original. And this ship has been through so many adventures, and to have it come to its end, its fiery end in this episode, I think.
You mean this movie?
Yes,
this movie. You mean this movie?
It's an easy error.
We got to do more movies on this podcast. I would make this error fewer times if we did more movies on this podcast. This is only the second movie we're doing. But, yes, the Enterprise. Now, there's a few key moments with the Enterprise here that, again, are sort of core memories. We'll get to the whole blowing up of the Enterprise, because that's a core memory for all sorts of people. Cormorants.
Cormorant.
Sugar ants.
The scene that I always recall is very evocative, or the scene that like holds a deep place in my memory, is when the battle damaged Enterprise is moving from left to right, you know, entering Space Dock, which, by the way, this is the introduction of this version of Space Dock, mm-hmm. right? This is the first time we see this is in Star Trek 3, becomes so prominent in TNG and later series.
Because the one we saw in the recent episode of TOS that we watched, the ships are just kind of flying around in orbit.
And there's like in the newest Picard, I think they have a brand new one. It's like an upgraded
but
version.
They still have the old school looking lights going blink 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 across the top. When they were approaching Space Dock, Sulu's all like estimating Space Dock in 2.1 hours. 2.1 hours, who says that? So that's like 2 hours and 6 minutes.
That's a long time.
Who says 2 hours and 6 minutes?
Maybe he doesn't like the number 6.
Scientists.
Science, 2.1
those
hours.
Old scientists.
They're turning it into base 10.
Well, it's
10.
Funny too because there's not like there's no such thing as metric time.
Right, exactly.
There's no metric time and there's no metric temperature, right? Those are two things that there's no metric.
Everyone's always
for.
Like, well, Celsius is at zero, but
it's
no,
not.
It's not.
It is not a metric. Nonsense. It is not a metric measurement.
Actually, I can't say everyone says that. A lot of people assume that.
I am somebody who is. I'm very
Celsius is some whack shit.
I'm pro metric. I'm not a big fan of Celsius. I think Fahrenheit is the better temperature thing because Celsius is not based on anything. It's arbitrary. It's not a metric easily convertible
unit.
All it
is zero means freezing, which makes a little more sense than Fahrenheit, but Fahrenheit is more granular.
That's the only thing that makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah. And I first heard this argument from Stephen Novella on the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe podcast. I think he's made it a few times. I personally find it a very convincing argument.
I hear he's fruity, isn't it?
And it's exactly what you're saying, Dan, is that Fahrenheit is more granular.
It's an even scale.
There's more details in there, and the fact that the boiling point or the freezing point, you don't need to worry about that most of the time, right?
Yeah.
Right?
But, it doesn't need to be zero.
It's really, yeah.
I don't, when I'm traveling around in Europe and it's all like, it's 20°C, I was like, ugh. Yeah, then they're like, right. Oh, now it's 21°C. It's like, no, I want it to be like
no, it's 30.
20.33°C.
Yeah.
All right. That digression aside.
Mm-hmm.
11.
I always love
the Enterprise. You made me think of it, Dan. The Enterprise coming to Space Dock at that angle. Brilliant shot.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant shot. The Enterprise cruising in there with all the wounds on the side, and everyone's looking at it, including Janice Rand, and they're all like, "Oh my god!"
I love
in the bar getting drunk, and that ship is all fucked up.
I love when ships are docked in space, especially like Space Dock, because it's the Space Dock station is amazing.
When ships are docked in space, it's like, especially in Space Dock.
Yeah, exactly, precisely, because they're giant.
You'll note I didn't make that comment.
What about?
Jesse made that comment.
In docked in space.
What about Dr. Space?
What about
Dr. Spatzo? Oh. I am Dr. Spatzo.
I am Dr. Spatzo.
Dr. Spatzo.
Everyone look up Dr. Spatzo. And the best part about telling people to look up Dr. Spatzo is they won't figure out how to spell that.
Yeah.
And Google won't know how to correct it. But
ask ChatGTP about his grandfather, Dr. Spatzo.
I am Dr. Spatzo.
These ships are pretty giant, right? And you've got these giant ships, several of them, spaced far enough distances apart that it's a lot of distance, and they're still surrounded by this giant fucking space dock.
Yes.
It's this giant building surrounding, like,
it's gorgeous.
People do that, and then look at all the like you look at all the windows,
baby.
There's all these windows. People do things behind it. It's a
that's why they don't invite Jesse over here. Because he's going to defenestrate him.
Oh, no, he's going to defenestrate.
That was from last week's episode.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Mr. Defenestrator.
We have a good memory.
That's called a callback.
It's a call, double, triple callback.
And I love the scene. Yeah, the dude, he was all looking out the window and the ship's going by. Like, he's looking. Do you think that they must have people, like, living? Do you think it's just military personnel that lives in Space Dock? Or do you think it's big enough to handle a whole civilization?
I think it's lower deck style where.
I don't think they have enough military personnel to fill that.
That's what I'm saying.
On lower decks, and one of the great things about lower decks is the animated format means they have effectively unlimited budget.
Oh yeah,
for
they
world
have like
building.
A whole malls and
so
shit
yeah,
like, that.
Like they show like all the shops and the street vendors and the arboretum and all that stuff. Now, granted, it's not always on this space dock, but
there's a couple of food courts.
The implication is that you got this massive
at least
thing.
Three Panda
probably
Expresses.
Three.
People are rocking.
There's probably five Sparrows.
Sparrow, yeah.
Is Sparrow still a thing in the United States?
I don't know
about Frankenstein.
Oh, I remember that. That was a place you could get a beer and a sausage. Like,
I always got the stuffed pizza at Sparrow.
That was
the way to be.
I usually got the Stromboli.
Now, that was good, too. Stromboli. I would get that, too.
I worked at the Swatch store at the mall, and on break, I would go to the Sparrow and get a Stromboli. There's some alliteration for you.
Yeah, good job.
Yeah, thank you.
That's a good of you.
That's a good of me. It's a good of me. I like it.
Did you sell seashells by the seashore?
How many have paid the price for your impatience?
This is also another joke from last week. Speaking of alliteration,
yeah,
that was a callback.
Yeah, well, we do a lot of callbacks. It's part one. People,
I mean, it's been a week. It's a week. They might not remember all the.
They might have saved up that episode so they could listen to it
saved
just, like, all at once
in their episode piggy bank.
Yeah,
it's time for total truth between us.
It's like a seamless. It's got Star Trek experience.
They saved it up in their Targ bank. Their Targy bank. They saved it up in their Targy bank.
Toby Targ.
Targ, the Targ.
Yes, as opposed to a piggy bank. The Klingon equivalent to a piggy bank would be a Targy bank.
A Targy bank.
Just audiences like it when you explain the joke.
Maybe they have like a gawk barrel.
Gawk barrel. But the Targy
bank. Bobbing for gawk.
The Targ is not to be mistaken with the Dick Tog, which is a weapon that when you press the button, it goes pa-ching. The Dick Tog.
Yes.
How do you pronounce like parentheses instead of vowels?
Dick Tog?
Dick Tog.
Maybe it's a diphthong.
It's a dick tug.
Is it a diphthong?
Dick Tug?
Dick Tug.
Dick Dick? Do you like Dick Dicks?
Isn't that like some kind of bird or something?
Mm. No, it's not a bird.
A Dick Dick. It's a bird. Isn't
Look
it?
Up Dick Dick.
It's a bird.
It's not a bird.
Or a lizard or
That's
something.
A titmouse.
It's not a lizard. A titmouse is a bird. A Dick Dick is not a bird. A Dick Dick is a little deer looking thing. It's like a tiny
that's
little
right.
deer looking
Yeah, that's
thing.
What I fucking said.
It's a little deer bird.
That's exactly what I said.
It's like
I
a, just, bird.
It was a bird.
I just looked it up and it's exactly what I said.
It's
it
a
was.
Bird that's shaped like a deer.
I'm just saying.
You don't, no, you aren't. Okay, Enterprise. We're still talking about the Enterprise.
Oh, yeah.
So, we see the Enterprise going into space dock. That's an iconic shot. We see the Enterprise floating by all damaged. That's an iconic shot. The next iconic shot is when they fucking steal the Enterprise.
Yep.
And oh,
that
yeah.
whole stealing the Enterprise.
Oh, my gosh.
That is like the heist of all heists. I think that's one of the best things in best stealing a thing in Star Trek. It's so fucking tense and it's great because it's so slow. It's two big fucking Navy ships like just lumbering around. You can imagine somebody stealing a fucking aircraft carrier or a frigate or some shit.
So yeah, 10 minutes of this movie was dedicated to this whole heist. So there was, I looked at the time markings at 37 minutes to 41 minutes. Break bones out of med bay. I'm calling it med bay.
Break bones.
Break bones. Med bay.
I'm gonna break bones.
I'm gonna break bones so hard it's gonna get me out of med bay.
I'm gonna break bones and chew gum.
Yeah, break bones.
And I'm all out of gum.
Yeah, break bones out of break McCoy out of the medical bay. To the transporter.
Because they're going to send him to the Starfleet Funny Farm.
From Starfleet Funny Farm. Yeah, where it was something about it. What was he saying?
Well, like, he's fucking nuts, dude.
Right? Now you guys got me all, like, trying to figure out where
now
I'm
getting hungry.
I thought you were going to click on a sound.
I was trying to click on a sound.
Chief O'Brien.
I was trying to click on the sound, and I couldn't do it.
And B'Elanna is not on it tonight.
Oh, my God.
B'Elanna's not on it.
Oh, man.
We do not have any cat.
B'Elanna's on
Federation Funny Farm.
It wasn't even worth it anymore. It wasn't even worth it anymore.
Well, it's another alliteration.
Federation Funny Farm.
To go back to your point of last week, it's another alliteration. There's a lot of, maybe Leonard Nimoy is just into alliteration.
I hear he's fruity as a nutcake.
There. That's what I was looking for this whole time.
For Shatner, who's, yeah, for
and
Kirk's
then the
sake.
Funny Farm.
I hear he's fruity as a nutcake.
Fruity as a nutcake. Boy, that was a failure.
What did you think about this
but
whole
thing?
Oh, wait,
the
wait,
thing
wait.
Is,
this whole
there's,
scene, though,
there's
the breakout.
Oh, wait,
fruit
wait.
Cake.
Yeah.
There's not nut cake.
Yeah, fruity is fruity as a nutcake.
You should say nutty as a fruit cake.
Yeah, but I think this is an example of Kirk getting a phrase wrong. Like he
no.
like he does more
no,
of
I, no,
in,
it's cool.
In Star Trek
I'm just,
4.
You know, I'm
fruity
just,
as a nutcake.
Just, you know, splitting.
I hear he's
Chief O'Brien.
You know, I hadn't noticed that before you mentioned that, Jesse. The fruity as a nutcake. That's some bizarre ass shit. But it works. It works for Shatner
that's
not
the
getting.
Thing. I don't know if he's the only person that said that or not, but yeah. That always stood out for me from the movie. I guess
so.
That's one thing I remember that I didn't mention in the last episode.
So as I
fruity, isn't
Dan's
it?
Dan's got the list.
We got the list.
The list of events
before I like lost myself in madness. 37 minutes to 41. It was they were breaking McCoy out of the med bay to the transporter with the age. aid of Uhura, mm-hmm. but to deal with that fucking Mr. Adventure guy.
Yeah, I had to deal with the biggest piece of shit in fucking Starfleet.
Yeah, really. Like, nobody, like, what was the deal with that guy? He's like, I know you're on your way out and everything, but.
Has that guy been in any other.
Yeah, you know, I forgot to. I meant to look it up because
I was trying to figure out who he was.
He did look familiar.
He looked like Cyclops, the guy who plays Cyclops.
But he's not. Yeah. He looked like a proto Cyclops.
He was not. He'd be
what
older.
Was that? What was that guy's name? He's been in several things.
Yeah, he was in Bling Bling, and he was in that Netflix show. The
He was in that movie with who's that guy on the baking show? Who has alopecia?
He was in Sonic the Hedgehog.
Alopecia, that guy.
Oh, Matt Lucas.
He's in a movie with Matt Lucas. Actually, really? Yeah. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
James Marsden.
Yes.
Did you know that, Patrick? Did you just not want to say it?
No, I equally was not remembering it. I know the name James Marsden very well. He was in Dead to Me. He was in Sonic the Hedgehog. He was in X-Men. But I could not remember the name because of my elderly withered brain.
What was the name of that Lucas character?
Matt Lucas.
Matt Lucas. So I'm going to like IMDb Matt Lucas here real quick because that's something we should take time to be doing.
But that guy, Lieutenant or Ensign, whatever the hell his name was a total piece of shit. He was really obnoxious. I commend...
Small Apartments. They were in a movie together called Small Apartments.
Okay, great. Yeah. They were in an obscure ass movie together. Yeah.
2012.
Uhura not punching the fuck out of this guy demonstrates her professionalism.
Have you lost all your sense of reality?
Yeah.
It's like, what? That was kind of a dumb line, too.
It was a dumb line. It sort of didn't make sense. Hey, that's Admiral Kirk. Oh, my God. But this is damn irregular.
Yeah.
I do like that they point out that, yes, there should be orders. There should be all sorts of things should be happening in a very standard, not even military organization. Just any organization that has any sort of procedures or standard operating procedures, anything like that, you would expect to have something along those lines for security purposes. But
very good for you, Lieutenant.
She was talking down to him. She knew what was the deal.
And well, so, yeah. I mean, obviously, part of what kept her from punching the guy probably was mm-hmm. that she knew she was about to shove him into a closet.
Yeah.
And he just all he was doing was making her enjoy that part of the plan more than she maybe initially would have.
Yeah.
Like if he was a really nice person, if it was a nice ensign there who was all polite and friendly, and then Uhura, I'm sure, would have felt bad about.
Well, he was basically like
into a closet.
He was like, I don't know how you don't go crazy in this piece of shit that you have life you have to live on this shitty shit ship,
right?
And you're getting old too, man. I know you don't care anymore about life because you're old. You know, it was just like. Jesus, man. What an idiot.
What a idiot.
So that was 37 to 41. Then from 41 to 45.
These are time codes in the movie?
So that was 5 minutes. Yeah, 37.
They're not just random numbers.
They're not. But
you're not picking them because they're prime numbers.
No, they're none of them.
Just a coincidence.
That's just a coincidence. Except for 45, yeah.
For new listeners, Dan loves prime numbers. And not in a bad way.
Two.
Not in a weird way.
No, it's just turned into like it's a preoccupation to an obsession to I'm in love with them. Like
I'm not suggesting
this
you're
is how telephone
in love
is.
With them. I don't think there's a romantic attachment, but I do think that there's a foundational sort of a fundamental appreciation for the awkwardness.
The fundamental breakfast.
Maybe you identify with a prime number because. Where does a prime number fit in? A prime number is necessary, but it doesn't, you know, everyone's looking at it like you just got that extra one.
You're doing your Jeff Goldblum impression at first.
Was I?
Goldblum.
No, it was not on purpose because I do not actually have a good Jeff Goldblum impression.
That's pretty good.
I can't do it.
You can go like,
I can do some of the mannerisms.
It's like I can only do the Donald Duck voice if it's just like but I can't like say anything, you know. I think everyone can do that. Everyone can, if they try, can go like.
I'm not good at that. I don't quite got it.
Jesse, why don't you give it a shot,
babo?
Okay, you don't have to. Okay, so
Jesse's very stingy.
I can't do Donald Duck.
It's fine.
Jesse's very stingy with his characters.
I work with a guy that can do Donald Duck.
His characters, characters pop out from time
to
time.
He does a lot more Kermit though.
Mm-hmm.
I am Kermit the Frog. I'm Kermit the Frog. I used to be able to do Kermit better. Can't do Kermit so well these days.
That's too bad. So 5 minutes of the movie, 37, 8, 9, 4, 4, 5 minutes of the movie is sent getting Bones out of jail. Then from 41 minutes to 45 minutes.
Have we concluded the getting Bones out of jail, though? Because there's the whole tiny bit with Sulu. Is that? Or
oh
is that,
yeah. That's included in that where Sulu flips that guy.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
was an awesome flip.
It was an awesome.
It was
flip.
Really believable.
And Sulu was like, "Don't call me fucking tiny."
Yeah,
because that guy was that being a guy being a dick.
That guy was being a dick too.
He was just like all of a sudden out of nowhere. I'm gonna start being a dick to this little guy.
Yeah, I'm just gonna stand up.
Yeah, he was doing. He was the funny
again.
Fun
you better watch.
I mentioned this in part one, but it could be that my often potentially unfair distaste for security personnel comes at least in part from this movie, as well as real life, as well as all my experiences in real
actual
fucking
cops,
life.
Yeah.
So, getting through this. And actually, it is around 37 minutes and 41. I didn't round off but a second or two. So okay, it just worked out that way.
Right. Well, shit.
41 to 45. It takes 4 minutes for the Enterprise to back out of the space garage.
Yes.
So that was pretty awesome.
I love that.
That was awesome.
One of my favorite parts. And again, I remember this so distinctly as a kid when Kirk's like, he's like, Scotty, okay, go. And mm-hmm. Scotty's like, mm-hmm. He's like, still living. And then Kirk's like, what's going on? He's like, yeah, I'm working on it. I just love that because you're so used to it. It's just all the plans working in perfect unison. And here they add these little bits of levity, which are important since the movie is such a fucking heavy movie
mm-hmm.
overall.
And then, so 45, 46, about a minute for them to clear space dock after backing out and then go to warp. And then 46 minutes to 47 Whoa. Minutes and 20 seconds. They zip away to the Genesis planet and this whole situation.
Genesis! Here, fucks up the Excelsior.
Yeah.
Scotty, as good as your word.
Aye, sir. The more they overthink the plumbing, the easier it is to stop up the drain. Here, Doctor. Souvenirs from one surgeon to another. I took them out of her main transwarp computer drive.
Sabotage.
Okay, a couple things on this scene with Scotty. First of all, it works great in the context of the movie. It's wonderful. It's hilarious. They've assigned Scotty to help with the final preparations to test out the Excelsior and its new transwarp drive. First time we're hearing this whole transwarp term that comes up a lot later in Star Trek. So all of that's great. It's really funny. It's a good payoff. I don't know if I agree with the philosophy that Scotty's espousing that just because something's you know more newer that it's easier to fuck up. I think yeah, that's true sometimes. I don't think it's like always true. Sometimes newer things have better error correction and better security procedures and other things like that. The other comment I would make is, and you can even, I don't know if you want to play that clip again or not, but it sounds to me like James Doohan is maybe had a little bit of, the old Scotch whiskey. The non-synthahol Scotch whiskey before filming this scene.
I'll jump to the forward of the part in question.
Scotty, as good as your word.
Aye, sir. The more they overthink the plumbing, the easier it is to stop up the drain. Here, doctor.
And this is not...
Souvenirs from one surgeon to another.
Maybe they did it after. They did the scene after lunch.
Computer drive.
It's not to besmirch James Doohan or Scotty. It's just there's a little bit of the old...
Yeah,
and it's frankly it's in character. So
I mean, he does. It's not like that's his normal voice. So
yeah, you know. That too. His normal voice is
the wine voice.
No, it's a Canadian voice.
It's a Canadian voice.
He's saying things like process and project.
Well, Scotty was skeptical of this whole Excelsior business from the start. There was this.
She's supposed to have transwarp drive.
Which is awesome.
And Sulu, of course, and Sulu captains the Excelsior later.
Yeah, and so, yeah, so he, and he's so
the
he's
Excelsior
all
has that guy from RoboCop.
Excelsior!
And he's all like...
And if my grandmother had wheels, she'd be a wagon.
Like, the whole time, he's, like, got some shit against the Excelsior, and I don't quite know why he's so against it. I guess to him, transwarp drive is just a, like, is the same thing as... It would be kind of like the Excelsior is to the Enterprise maybe what electric cars are to, like, an older...
Yeah.
Like mechanical car.
The
like,
Excelsior is the new thing in Star Trek, and he's used to the Enterprise being the top ship.
Well, I was thinking it was like you got a mechanic that works on like a your classic like mechanical car from the 90s, and then you have like
a Mopar,
and then let's say
Mopar Dodge.
Then let's say you have like an electric car or a hybrid or whatever, and so it's the difference between that. Like the old ones, the mechanics can work on more easily. The new ones, it's more like it's not as fun because you got to like program a computer. You can't replace the parts as easily. So maybe it's like the Excelsior is like becoming too computery or something. What you're saying, Jesse, that you thought it was just like he was feeling jealous of it.
Yeah.
I think he's feeling jealous of it as part of it. You could argue in some ways it's out of character for Scotty because Scotty was always reading the latest engineering manuals.
You would think,
like
yeah.
on vacation, he was always looking into the newest stuff.
That's right.
And it's not like he wasn't into new stuff.
And then future engineers are like computer programmers and like mechanical and electrical engineers. They're everything all at once.
But yeah. I think where we can make a little bit of sense of this is to add the context of being the early 1980s and specifically using the car example, because I think the car example is a good one, Dan. You have people now buying these imported cars and smaller cars, and people really are like, yeah, these cars are not as good. Mm. They are not built to last like an old whatever. Whether that was true or not, I don't know, but that certainly I was the perception at the time. So it sort of fits into that context. Because nowadays, it's like, yeah, you buy an electric car, it's like, oh yeah, that car's like way better.
Yeah.
Like, it's way better. It's simpler. It's a simpler car. It has fewer parts. It's less complicated. But anyway, so it's funny to see Scotty do that.
They started making cars like too well or something like nowadays, because the reason the used market. I'm getting to talk about used car. The used car market. I'm sorry, that was my fault. I took that analogy a little too far. I took it. Yeah, you brought it to the next step, and I was like, yeah, let's keep going with the car analogy. But let's just talk about used cars and their prices.
We'll have a separate podcast where we can talk about sort of like policies and sort of manufacturing and how that impacts. Social stuff.
You were speaking about the whole thing with Uhura, and she doesn't go with them on their mission. Yeah. She just meets up with them later just to be in time for the next movie.
Because they did not want to pay Nichelle Nichols.
No. Right. That's a part of this.
I was looking
She's in the next movie, though.
I was looking for some like Uhura quotes, and there wasn't that many to grab.
Is she in four?
She is in four. Yeah. She does a lot in four.
She does a lot in four
because they're all like, they're all back in time. Yeah. Clearly here they said, okay, Uhura is going to Vulcan to set everything up. Okay.
Because she tries to talk to the probe thing.
You could have sent an email, you know, it's all good. I think they just didn't want to pay her the money. Now, whatever the reason, what Uhura there is great. It's just Uhura is vastly underused in this movie, and that is one of the drawbacks to this movie. What's not a drawback is the do we know the name of the captain of the Excelsior?
Esteban?
He's the captain of the Grissom.
The Grissom.
The captain of the Excelsior
Esteban?
Is it Captain Terrell or something? No, it's not Terrell. What am I doing?
Let's look it up.
Okay. Well, I can talk a minute about I can talk about the Grissom. You want me? Let's talk about Jesse.
Captain Stiles.
Captain Stiles.
James B. Sicking.
Captain Stiles.
So Captain Stiles is great. He's a complete, also arrogant piece of shit.
He tries to get away with warp drive.
Yeah. He's the guy from Doogie really Howser.
Captain Stiles.
Dad on Doogie Howser.
Captain Stiles is an arrogant SOB on his big giant fucking bridge. But his whole crew, what I love is he's walking around and his whole crew looks so fucking cocky. They're all like, have their little readouts.
It's the guy
and
from
stuff.
RoboCop.
They're like, hey, we're going to fucking get those guys. And I do really like the scene where he's like filing his nails in bed. Captain, you got to get to the bridge.
Bridge.
We're at yellow alert. He's all like, how can we be at yellow alert in space, Doc? He's like, someone's stealing the Enterprise.
it's incredible.
It's like, who do they think is, of course, it's somebody's just stealing the Enterprise. Of course, it's going to be the actual crew of the Enterprise. Who else would steal the Enterprise?
It's such a funny thing. Anyway.
Those rascals.
Anyway, I think let's take a quick break and then we can continue our discussion.
Perhaps even conclude it.
And we'll get close to concluding. All right, we will be right back. Okay, we're back. Star Trek. Star Trek 3.
I was speaking of Captain Esteban.
Search for Spock.
Speaking of Esteban. The only reason we're speaking of Esteban is because I brought him up as the incorrect answer of who the captain of the Excelsior was.
Right.
So, but that's still a segue. Even though I got the wrong answer, it's still a segue, right? Even you can get something wrong and still use it as a segue.
That's the spice of life, baby.
That and cardamom.
Debatable.
What do you prefer, cardamom or...
It depends on the
or cardamom. Cumin. Cardamom is not something you take by itself. Cardamom is a...
It's a strong one.
It's a component.
Use it lightly.
Would you use cardamom or... Or what's the orange one? That
saffron?
Bergamot?
No, the one that you put in like...
Who's it what?
With cumin. A lot.
Coriander.
No, not coriander. It's like an orangish color.
Turmeric?
Turmeric? I think I'm thinking of turmeric.
Yes.
What the fuck are you talking? What are we talking about?
Maybe I'm thinking of turmeric.
You were introducing such a great point about Captain Esteban.
You lost me, Dan.
Well, now I'm all looking up Indian spices.
Why? This is a Star Trek podcast.
Well, because you guys started it.
No, we didn't. That's,
yes, you did.
We're going to have to do a different podcast about it's got spices.
No, because cardamom. Jesse said it was the spice of life.
Yes, exactly. It was a throwaway statement.
Well,
it wasn't made to derail this podcast.
Now I can't
remember. It was meant to bring it to an end.
Well, Captain Esteban. I want to talk about Captain Esteban and the Grissom.
Okay, I want to. Okay,
science vessel.
Okay,
goofy shape.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. So it's got the triangle shape.
That's how science vessels.
It's
look,
got the triangle shape like a normal Starfleet ship. Like let's pretend the Enterprise, but the body.
Well, just pretend.
But the body isn't
the body.
The body is not connected to the disc. What looks like the nacelles are connected to the disc. This is the opposite of normal Starfleet ships.
And the disc
ships.
Is like a square thing. That's like where the scientists work.
So
and then ops is down at the bottom.
So the Enterprise, you have the shape of the disc. It's got a little neck that goes to the body, and off the body comes the two arms that are the nacelles. But in this case, with the Grissom, the body has two arms that go like 90 degrees up from each other, connected to the nacelles, which are then connected to the ship. So it's body to nacelles to ship instead of bodies to nacelles to disc, as opposed to disc to body to nacelle.
Body is in like what engineering section? That would be.
That's essentially
what that is.
Yeah. It's just the inverse. You just take, just like knock out.
I like it.
Just take the Enterprise, knock
off. I think it looks cool.
It's cool.
I think it's a cool ship.
Just take the Enterprise's nacelles connection to the body.
I'm sad it got blowed up.
So just take the Enterprise's nacelles connection to the body and zip them up, rotate them up to touch the disc. Okay. I got it.
What the
I liked it. No, I liked it too. It was cool.
What the audience at home missed out on. In all of that, is the incredibly complex yoga poses that Dan was entering into as he was training.
It was like
the physical structure of the ship.
I tell you true.
It was like a it was like a dance he did.
TAS, good old fashioned TAS. Mm-hmm. Yes, but the Grissom, I enjoyed seeing
John Grissom.
Grissom.
Gus Grissom, presumably named after Gus Grissom.
He was an astronaut.
Kids, look him up. Look up Gus Grissom.
He was one of them astronauts.
One of them U.S. of A. astronauts.
Those old scientists.
Help me.
That's what a dark movie this is. It's fun. We're having such a fun conversation, but it's really, it's
we
funny. There is this undercurrent.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to the darkest part yet.
Horribleness, but we will. We'll bring you all down right at the end. How about that? No, but the Grissom is, it's cool that it's a science ship.
Science is good.
I like science.
I'm into science.
I like science.
I'm into science in a big way.
I like that.
It makes the world go round.
I don't know if it was...
Well, science observes the world going round.
I agree with
that. The process of science.
Yeah, no, that's...
Through the process of science, one can observe the world going round.
I was just being...
Through the process of science, one can craft a rudimentary model that may or may not reflect reality. But it gets closer and closer with higher fidelity as we learn more knowledge.
But if you lost all your sense of reality?
You gotta learn the knowledge.
At least science is scientific.
But how?
But we referenced earlier, we referenced the Excelsior crew and how they were all arrogant and stiff and just looked like fucking assholes.
The Excelsior.
The casting and the directing and the framing of the shots on the Grissom Bridge is totally different. These people all look like nerdy, awesome scientist people, like cool people that you want to hang out with.
Yeah.
Because they're all like into some, they're all like.
It's a shame when they get it blown away.
It's like they're all like, oh my God, it's a doodle doodle. Oh, it's a 1 degree centigrade. But they're all so excited. And then Captain Esteban's all like leaning in.
It's a centigrade.
See, they got cactus with snow on it.
We need to even out our voices. So when we make caricature voices, we need to do stuff like southern and northern voices.
Okay, provide an example.
No.
I mean,
But I was just trying to do. I was just trying to do like, hey, and now I'm doing. Now I'm doing a mid-Atlantic voice.
Hey,
I'm a mid-Atlantic Atlanter.
Wow, totally. That's totally, totally.
Okay.
So you have we have to mix them up.
I think that's enough, sir.
Okay.
Because we don't want to show favoritism.
Jesse's getting into professor mode. He's scolding us, knocking us down, getting us back on track. Yes, what were we discussing? Grissom. So,
John Grissom.
You already did that joke. You did that joke already.
No! Isn't it John Grisham?
Yes, and that's the other thing that was aggravating me about the joke is the joke didn't work. I didn't call that out earlier because I thought it was apparent. But perhaps it's good that Jesse called it out that yes, it's John Grisham. So
it's funnier for me.
It's though, it's a joke that just is there's no reason for it. No.
Nothing can be done about it.
Okay. But unfortunately, all these cool characters who are really awesome and seem fun and cool science nerdy people, they all get blown up by an errant Klingon.
The captain's all like evasive. It's like there's a science ship. All they got is evasive.
Yeah, right.
And they didn't have enough evasive for it to work.
One could question the utility of sending an unarmed science ship to a hotly contested experimental weapon planet, even if there was agreement across the great powers, which that's one of the implications going on behind the scenes. We don't see it directly, but there's these constant references to, everyone got together, including enemies, you know, like the Klingons and whoever, like all these people got together and they all agreed.
Well,
they're all like, we gotta like be careful about this shit because this is some fucked up shit.
How come the Vulcans didn't turn those guys in then?
Which guys?
The guy, like, you know, the Enterprise guys that when they landed on Vulcan.
Oh, well, I think that by then the Vulcans were probably all worried more about the Spock stuff.
Yeah, okay.
And who knows what the other ones, we don't get the details on like what the Klingon High Command or the others.
Yeah, not until the next movie when there's that Klingon guy bitching about shit.
Yes, yeah, or in Star Trek V, actually. Isn't it Star Trek V?
I forget.
Star Trek V and Star Trek VI. Yes, so there's all this sort of background of geopolitical stuff, but as you were referencing, I believe it was in part one of the podcast, Dan, you were saying how one of the nice things about this movie is how tight it is. Like it's like focused on this particular story.
Mm-hmm.
They give you enough hints in the background, enough
implications.
It does not dilly-dally.
The only time it dilly-dallies is in the escape, but the escape was tense enough that it wasn't really dilly-dallying.
And it made it more tense by making it all slow.
Yeah.
But this is a really hyper-focused storyline.
I like a good dilly-dally.
With enough world building and implication in the background so that we feel that they're embedded in larger events, but the focus of those events is on what's happening on this ship,
what's happening
planet.
Now.
And yes, or what's happening now when Raj left.
Two's company.
5,000 kilograms.
Yes. Also, and not metric.
Not metric.
I like
3,000 kilograms.
Yeah. I like
2,000 kilograms.
That's some Klingon shit.
Wasn't at one point the guys all like, 5 kilograms?
Well,
1,000 kilograms.
Yeah, so see if you can figure out what he's saying here.
Laval Kelly.
It almost sounds like he's speaking Klingon.
Yeah,
or something.
It might be a Klingon. That might be exactly what it is.
But if you look at the closed captioning, I'm pretty sure it says 500 calicams. But
no, I didn't look at the closed captioning. Maybe the closed captioning was translating.
That's
the
your
Klingon
thing,
for
man.
Maybe it mistranslated Klingons. Well, the script from Chakotea.net says 500 calicams. Kelicams too, but let me play this again. That does not sound like 500 kilocams to me. It doesn't sound like
1,000 kilocams. 5,000 kilocams.
Was that an example of the Southern voice that you just snuck in there?
I didn't even mean to.
Because you said, like, that doesn't sound like 5,000 to
well,
me.
Well, being from Virginia,
I'm going to say that does not sound like 500.
Being from Northern Virginia means sometimes I sound Southern, sometimes I sound like I'm from New Jersey. So
right, it's some in-betweeny stuff.
Well,
man.
I guess it's because both my parents are from New Jersey. That might have something to do with it, but they don't speak like New Jersey people.
Now, please provide us with an example of what you mean. What do they not speak like?
You know, they don't say, like, They don't say.
Yeah, but no,
what are you doing? Hey, what are you doing?
No, not
what
are you like doing? That. But their accents.
What are you doing?
The way they, you know, the yeah, their accents are shaded.
Now we're talking about the accents of my parents. Right, so yes, sorry, to, I was talking about I was talking about the price now. I was talking about the price of used cars earlier, and I was just noting now we're talking about my parents' accents.
Like, they don't have comical New Jersey accents.
No, they don't.
They just have like regular people New Jersey accents.
Yeah, they just say
it's not like a Bugs Bunny card.
They hit some consonants harder. It's like, what are you doing? Yeah. What are you doing? Yeah. What are you doing?
Oh my god.
When I try it, of course it sounds like a caricature. But then sometimes it sounds a little like y'all, you know, sometimes a little bit, just sneaks in there.
Sometimes it's just 500 kilocams and you just better watch out.
5, 7, yeah,
fuck those
nine,
motherfuckers
eight,
up.
8, 6, 5, 8, 7, 9, 6,
please
five,
tell me you're
going to
play
seven,
the tape. I hope you're going to play.
8, 7,
no,
five,
I have no idea.
6.
Oh, wait.
8, 6, 7, 5, 3, 0, 9.
No, but that's good. I thought, and it's all good, I thought you were going to play Close All the Shops on the Mall and the other stuff from Spaceballs. They're going through the self-destruct. Yeah.
Fuck.
Spaceballs. It's like, close down the three-ring circus.
There was a lot to grab from this episode.
Spaceballs? Oh shit! There goes the planet.
I don't know. I remember like when they hit, they all go down the stairs after it's like going off, and like Dark Helmet's all like, "Fuck!"
You know? Yeah, that's right.
It's like, whoa.
There was some cussing in that movie.
Yeah. Well, that's a great movie.
PG-13.
So indeed, PG-13. So, there is of course.
Were you trying to look for the next topic of conversation?
Vulcan. I mean, the planet Vulcan is like it's like Rivendell on Tatooine or something.
Rivendell on Tatooine.
If it was like Rivendell on Tatooine,
but it's much more red and fiery.
It's like fiery and smoky and stuff.
Vulcan is fire and smoke.
Yeah.
Is that a Vulcan? I guess that's a Vulcan. I couldn't tell, you know, in the foreground when it shows the Vulcan temple, you know, like on the ledge and stuff.
Yeah, man.
And there's in the foreground, there's some stairs. I couldn't tell if those stairs were like a few meters wide or like 20 meters wide.
Massive,
I don't know how big the stairs were, but they look real fucking long.
Yeah.
And Sarek at one point says,
well, when you see
the Sarek, he says, like, or no, it's McCoy saying, climb the stairs of Mount Salea.
Jeez,
oh,
when you say long, you mean like it takes a long time to travel, not like.
No, I'm just saying, forget the
width. You're not talking about the width.
Those
talking
bastards,
about
those, they live
distance
so long,
covered from the base of the stair to the top. Was long.
It takes forever. Yeah.
Regardless of how that distance was subdivided into stairs.
Okay.
When you live like 200 years, it doesn't matter.
Regardless. That's what I'm getting at, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
That's my measurement.
David?
Well, perhaps, yes. We should talk about some of the fucked up shit.
So, Rivendell, I'm curious, though, where'd you get Rivendell from?
Well, it just looked all...
Why are you saying Rivendell?
Yeah,
because I'm Virginian.
You're talking like me.
That's
hey,
silly. That's
I'm Virginian.
Like, that's not even Virginian.
Y'all from Rivendell?
Rivendell.
You live up there with.
You shouldn't.
With all the males.
You shouldn't assume those things about people with Southern accents, Patrick.
Assume what?
Well.
That they live in Rivendell?
No, you were my. You know, I could tell what you were. Coded language. You
know. Okay.
The way that Vulcan was kind of.
I'm just kidding.
It was all sort of fantasy like, you know.
Yeah.
The way they were with their, you know, the ceremonial aspect, the priesty stuff.
The priesty priest.
It's cool how they like.
The sort of spear scepter things. And
Vulcan gets more and more.
Funny headdresses.
Fleshed out as time goes on. Because we see it a little bit, a little bit on TOS, a little bit on TAS. We see. Yes, yes, yes.
I ask for Faltor.
Yes, yes. I was thinking exactly the same thing. I was saying. This whole thing was influenced, yeah. or somehow, if not influenced by, emerged from the same cultural ether that decided you needed a bunch of gobbledygook.
Yeah, right.
Do some magic gobbledygook business. Mm-hmm. Fuck around with people. All I was going to say was that, yeah, we see Vulcan in Star Trek, the motion picture. Now we see it here, and we get a little bit more fleshed out. Then more and more Enterprise. We discussed that Enterprise episode. Not
like they
not
poor
but a few
air
weeks
quality,
ago.
Though.
Well, yeah, did look like they had poor air quality.
Yeah, Vulcan never
that's
looks.
That's what it does. That's what it is.
It rarely looks. I should say rarely. It rarely looks like a great place to be.
No, it's got nothing on it.
But it's like Rivendell in the sense that it has
it's got
fancy folks and
it's
like
got them fancy folks.
Like you're saying Vulcans are like elves.
Oh, you mean
are
like,
you saying just because they're pointy ears?
Are you talking
there is that connection too, yeah.
Which is a fair connection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like foremost in my mind, but that's another bit.
You could be referring to when you're talking about the funny people. You could be referring to. All those Vulcan ladies with the right angle hands. Did you notice the right angle hand people?
No, I did. I know what ladies are.
They're all like holding their hands all in a really bizarre and looks extremely uncomfortable to hold for a long time.
I know
time.
What you're talking
right
about.
Right angle thing.
But I don't remember their hands.
You got to go back and watch the movie.
You got to watch the movie, Dan. You got to watch
the right angle hand people. And then standing right next to the right angle hand people are the big oversized structured hoodie person where it looks like a tiny little head in a big old thing. There's a ton of bald Vulcans.
Bald
Vulcans. There's a ton of bald Vulcans, like you were Forrest Gump. Well, a little bit of stinging rain.
There was
a little bald Vulcans.
I was born and raised.
A little bit of stinging rain.
I was born and raised in Virginia.
She taught.
And it pops out from time to time.
She taught me how to dangle. he taught her how to dangle.
Oh, snap.
Wait, no, who taught who how to dangle?
I don't know what
don't
the
remember,
fuck
dude.
You're talking about,
she
dude.
Taught me how to climb.
That's not appropriate.
She taught me how to climb. I taught her how to dangle.
Oh,
that's
no.
From Forrest Gump.
Oh, okay. All right. I haven't seen that movie in a long time because I don't think it's that great.
Well, no, it's not.
It's a little silly.
I like Robert
it's
Zemeckis.
It's entertaining, but it's
maybe.
Like,
I don't like Robert Zemeckis. I think when you, I liked it as a kid.
It
when
bugs
you go
me
back
out.
And, when you watch it, when I've watched it more recently, I'm just like, this is a weird, fucked up,
no,
kind of weird.
Well, no, so
weird
it's indulgent.
Movie.
It's an indulgent.
I don't like it.
It kind of.
I don't know what the message is.
No.
The thing is it was fun the first time I watched it. Now when I watch it, it's like kind of bums me out in this weird way. It makes me feel bad inside.
I don't think it's got a good message.
It's some kind of baby boomer nonsense.
Probably. All right. But, you know, it's not baby boomer nonsense.
Star Trek.
Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock, with a bunch of crazy Vulcan business.
Crazy Vulcan business.
I ask for foul tor pot.
We discussed earlier how this movie...
Who is the keeper of the Katra?
One reason it's important is to the lore...
To the zeitgeist?
No, the lore of Star Trek. Not to the zeitgeist, either the contemporaneous zeitgeist or the
zeitgeist.
Contemporary... Zeitgeist, the current zeitgeist,
the polterzeit,
the time ghost, zeitgeist. Zeitgeist means ghost, time ghost.
Do you have any polterzeits?
I mean, it translates as the spirit of the times.
I didn't say
but it literally means time ghost.
What does polterzeit mean?
Polter is like polter, a polter, polter time.
Polter time?
Yes.
It's polter time?
Yeah.
It's polter time.
It's hammer time.
Why is it hammer time?
Okay.
You wish it.
The point I was attempting to make, and I will now insist to make.
Chief O'Brien.
Is
Vulcan
that,
mysticism.
We learn a lot about Klingons in this movie, but we also learn about a lot about Vulcans.
And we learn a lot about love.
We learn about the Katra. We learn about the idea of transferring the Katra. We learn about the bald Vulcans and the right angle Vulcans. We
the right angle Vulcans.
We were already familiar with female Vulcan priestesses, but we get a cool new one, which is pretty rad. She's really fucking great. She's super excellent in this role. We get to see the long stairways and all that business. We get to see the cool bathrobes.
I always wonder if those are really comfortable or if they're burlappy. Or
whatever Spock was wearing,
it's
I
like
think
terry
was,
cloth.
I think it
it's
was
like
probably
terry cloth. Yeah, yeah. Is it terry cloth sucks up water or something? Is that what sucks up water?
It's like a towel. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, that's like a towel robe. Yeah, it's like a towel robe. Yeah. You don't think it's burlappy?
No,
I don't think
that's
it's
so
burlappy.
Not at all.
Like
not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Hey, not at all. Hey. What are you doing? Hey.
What are you talking about?
Up north and shit.
Hey, what are you doing?
Hey.
Not at all.
Get out of here.
Hey, Jesse.
With or without?
What are you going to do?
I'm going to get out of here.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to get out of here.
What are you going to do? It's kind of like,
I'll tell you what I'm going to do.
Okay, I'm going to end my... I was going to get even deeper into it, and I decided against it.
Let's just get back to the podcast. Yeah.
We're starting to degrade a bit here. Okay, Patrick, you can continue with your point.
We're providing a sufficient amount of content.
Content is content.
Going above and beyond here. Talking about a movie in which Kirk's son gets fucking stabbed to death by a Klingon.
Right.
And William Shatner does some of his best acting ever and is all like, "You Klingon bastard. You killed my son," and he falls down. He falls down. It's like, "You
Klingon bastard, you killed my son."
Yeah, and by the way, it's not "You Klingon bastard, you killed my son." It's "You Klingon bastard, you've," as in "you have killed my son."
Wait.
Kirk is a nerd. He's grammatically correct.
Yeah.
Right.
Even
Klingon
in his grief.
"Bastard, you killed my son. Klingon bastard, you killed my son."
Yeah, there's a "you've" in there.
He's well spoken.
"Killed my son." He's very well spoken.
That's how you get to be a captain.
Yeah.
That was weird. That was a weird little heart. There's no special effects there. That was
so you're talking
weirdness.
About, yeah, like he you were saying like how he like, you know, it's anticlimactic in a way, but that somehow makes it more climactic because it just kind of happens.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Oh, he's dead."
It's brutal.
And it's like all quiet, and it's like there's no big like, "Oh," yeah. it's just this slow it's like you, the audience, are realizing it along with Kirk that like, yeah, "Oh shit, that's
and then
fucked
he knows
up.
He's gonna kill them all.
Mm-hmm.
He does that thing where he
leans
on the back railing. He sort of hides his face from his crew just for a second. He gives himself a moment, and then he's like, "All right, we're gonna fuck these motherfuckers up, and here's how we're gonna do it." And he just sort of figures out the whole plan to lure them onto the ship.
Not
and
even
blow
10
it
minutes
up.
Later, he kind of like the whole sun death thing, they kind of move on from that. And they never really come back to that too much, except from then on out, we know he hates Klingons, but they just kind of, they even play the fun, happy adventure music, like not even 10 minutes later.
I agree. And I think that one of the flaws of this movie is that as powerful as that death of David scene is, and the motivation it gives Kirk both for the scene in this movie as well as his later animosity that comes up in Star Trek VI and is in a sort of a pivotal bit of info for
Klingon bastard, you killed my son,
a bit of motivation for Star Trek VI, that's all well and good. But it also sort of introduces this issue where, they kind of go back to forget. They sort of forget about David being dead pretty quickly.
Forget about
Klingon.
It's not really mentioned too much later. And
what are you talking about?
I think potentially more problematic is it sort of fucks around with, like, what's the exact theme of this movie? Is the theme of the movie that Kirk was willing to sacrifice a shitload of stuff, like, to help Spock? Like, was Spock's life sort of fundamentally worth more than the Grissom and not that
well,
was Kirk's
the needs
fault,
the needs of the one is greater than the needs of the many.
And I was saying in part one of the podcast, I was saying that something I recall about, I really like that end line. I like the reversing of that. It's a loaded statement as a result of that, but that killing of David sort of doesn't fit into that. I buy into the whole, like, we risk our lives, we risk going to jail. I don't buy into, I don't have to worry that much about my son being murdered because of, here's the end result, is a sort of a goofy version of Spy.
Yeah. And speaking of the reversing thing, I would say that when he says the needs of the one outweigh the needs of the many, that definitely follows through Starfleet, through later episodes of Trek. Like that one episode of TNG where Picard has to decide whether or not he's going to give that virus to the Borg to genocide all of them or not, and he decides against it. And but the reason he decides against it is because he doesn't want to commit genocide. Well, that's a case where that would be the needs of the many outweighing the needs of the few, right? You could just kill off a bunch of Borg. It's a lot of people, but he's saving more lives as a result. But Picard doesn't do it in I, Borg.
All right. So regular listeners will know that Dan has developed over the time. We've been doing this podcast nearly 200 episodes now. This is episode 191. And over that time, I believe it's fair to say that we've gotten better at being podcasters. We've been gotten better in all sorts of metrics. And one
what?
Thing, and one thing that Dan's gotten real good at is bringing up the episode of TNG, iBorg, and specifically the whole genociding the Borg with a virus thing.
I know what I did.
It used to be fairly ham-fisted how he got that into a discussion, but here he's really learned what? The skill of yeah, finding little hooks.
Slipped it right in.
Tricking us into hearing this. I'm wondering if
be careful what you wish
we
for.
we haven't ever discussed iBorg. I mean, we have, but not we haven't done that as an episode that we
would you rather
on.
Have an iBorg or receive an eBorg?
I want to know if we just did iBorg, if we would did a podcast episode on iBorg. Would it sort of exorcise it from your system?
I think I would go into an infinite loop and I would just kind of zap out.
Yeah, that intrigues me. Well, we'll have to see what your algorithm comes up with somewhere down the line. But anyway, back to Star Trek. You know what? We should take a quick break.
Yeah.
And then when we finish, when we're done, then we'll like wrap things up.
Oh my God.
Okay. We'll be right back. All right, we have returned to the concluding segment of our show.
Have we?
So, okay. Speaking of, some deep, heavy stuff and then kind of moving on from that, would you take this part as comedic or no, or maybe a little bit?
Nah.
Wait, we gotta... Okay, well, moving on.
All right.
This scene right here.
I have had enough of... You!
I love
it. Like when he screams, oh, that's totally funny. No, I mean, the first part.
What was the question? Is it comedic or...
Yeah, I was joking a second ago. Him falling to his death was not the comedic part. But, the whole thing of like, I have had enough of you. That was fun. Yeah.
Of you. Yeah. That's the cadence. The cadence is hard.
The cadence is slightly different than what you expect.
You don't get it the first time because it's a Shatner cadence.
Yeah, because I wanted to go, I have had enough of you.
I have had enough of you.
I have had enough.
Oh, no, I got it wrong.
We both got it wrong.
Because it's hard. It's a hard cadence to do.
I can't even do it.
We shouldn't bother.
We shouldn't bother. We shouldn't further embarrass
ourselves.
We should leave it to the professionals.
Unrepeatable.
Unrepeatable.
There's only one man in the universe. There's only one person in the universe that can do it.
There's only one man.
That's William Shatner. Who went to space and was all like, all I saw was death.
Yeah. That's kind of
It was a really profound thing, but everyone was like, oh, did you have fun? He was like, I just saw death.
I'm going to die.
He's the only one of these people who's still alive.
We all have it drilled in our head how insignificant we are.
You got trepanated? Was it a self-trepanation?
No.
You're talking about drilling into the head?
No, I'm saying that we all have drilled into our head that we are insignificant in this world, but William Shatner actually experienced that feeling, apparently.
Yes, yeah.
So that's what gave
Which
him
is,
some problem.
Hard to get through to some people with that feeling. I think probably overall a positive thing for him. But
Admiral.
Yeah. Admiral.
Admiral?
But you were saying something, Dan. You were saying something.
I said, I've had enough of you. Was that comedic? It's kind of comedic.
Yeah, it was whimsical.
Sure. Yeah.
Semi-badass.
It was pretty badass. It was good. It's a good memorable part. It's pretty awesome. See, he kicked that Klingon's ass. Like, I don't know if I buy that, but
Well, I did think it was cool that he had some troubles. It wasn't like David getting killed by a Klingon was like, yeah, of course. I mean, kind of skinny little sign. Oh,
he's a wuss.
He's a little Tom Hanks guy. I don't know why in this movie, because I don't get it in Star Trek 2, but in Star Trek 3, David comes across as a Tom Hanks figure. Doesn't he?
I guess I can see that. He's got some
mannerisms. He's got some facial.
Wow!
Business.
What? Wow!
Bosom buddies style action.
Wow! That's my Tom Hanks impression. Wow!
Can you do it?
You've done that before.
Can you do the part where in the money pit
when
he
falls through the floor
and gets stuck in
I don't
the?
Even, I don't even remember. I can't do fake laughter. It freaks me out.
Or when he eats all the
when
testicles.
When I start fake laughing too much, I start laughing for real, and then I can't stop, and it sucks.
That's upsetting to learn.
Yeah. It sucks when you, like, laugh so hard you get scared.
Yes.
So wait, we were talking about what now?
Tom Hanks.
Kirk kicked that guy's ass.
Okay, Kirk kicked that guy's ass.
He didn't really. He got the upper hand. Mm-hmm. And he got the upper hand in classic Star Trek style because he was trying to help Krug, and Krug was like, ah, fuck you, we'll both die. And then Kirk was like, all right, fuck you.
Speaking of Krug, this is 15-second clip. I think it's really kind of sums up his character. So I can ask for silence on this clip, please. This is 16 seconds. This is an important Krug line.
Oh, yes. New cities, homes in the country. Your woman at your side, children playing at your feet. And overhead, fluttering in the breeze, the flag of the Federation. Charming. Station.
Station!
You got me. That was good. I was not expecting that.
No one sees the station. No one expects the station. I've got two short questions for you. Here's the traditional guess the context based on a short portion of the line.
All right.
Eight one.
That's from the start. That's the log from the log from the log with Shatner with Kirk.
Engine room flight recorder visual star date 8128.78.
Yep.
Go.
Enhance.
Out sounds of danger?
Like, sounds like he's saying shit at the end, but he's not. Okay, this is a new one I'm trying out. This is a new one.
I don't understand.
This is a new game show I'm trying out.
A new
so
game
before
show.
It was guess the context based on a short portion of the line. Okay. This one's called try and figure out the visual from the sound.
Okay.
I think I get it.
I'm sure we'll understand it more once we hear the sound. So, and Jesse and I will attempt to guess the visual.
Try and figure out the visual from a sound. From the sound.
Okay. That's in the bar. In the McCoy bar.
What were they doing?
That I don't remember.
I'll give you 5/6 of a point for that. Jesse, do you remember?
Nope.
They were playing that hologram version of Sopwith.
Oh, word, yeah. Oh, that's right, I remember.
Yeah.
That was wild. There's a lot of wild stuff in that bar. I like bars where... every nook and cranny has some shit going on.
So Sopwith is an old 90s... or is it late 80s?
I think late 80s. At least Sopwith 1. Sopwith 2 kind of sucked.
Yeah, but that's what it looked like. It kind of like looked like their version of Sopwith. There was some cool like computer... I like when there was some cool wireframe computer like... Looks like it's the movie was made in 1993, but it had some like looking from the 1980s graphics going on, which I kind of dug.
Which movie are you talking about?
This one that we just saw.
This isn't from 1993.
This is not from 1993.
Oh, wait. When was this from?
It's more like
83, 84.
Oh, wait. What was I thinking? Oh, I was thinking. What was I thinking?
What were you thinking? Were
you thinking of Jurassic Park?
No, I think.
Well, regardless, whatever you were thinking, the main point I wanted to make was that Sopwith as a game was really good, except I had one drawback, was that it was tied to the computer's system clock.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you played it on different computers, it would be faster or slower. And if you tried to play it on like a Pentium or something, it would just go like, bzzz, it was unplayable. There was no way to play it.
You have to get like an old... 286 virtual machine.
Yes, but you had to wait a little bit before you could actually get an adequate 286 virtual machine because you had to wait. There were a few generations after the 286 that you had to do it.
I think I must have read 1984 and thought 1994. I don't know what I was thinking, but okay, there was appropriately placed 80s graphics in this movie, which was cool.
Super duper 80s graphics.
Super 80s.
Why do you do this to us?
All right, what's the next?
Jesse, why did you do that?
Do you have any more sounds?
Jesse.
Why did you do that? Why will you do this?
Why?
But why?
Why?
Why not?
Okay.
Why couldn't you have red blood like any normal human?
Oh, that's not the same one.
We have to start getting into our final thoughts here and start thinking about closing things down.
So Krug, there's this guy Maltz. Do you remember this guy Maltz?
That's Maltz. Isn't that the Larroquette?
I had trouble connecting the Klingon names to the different Klingon characters.
Right, so I looked at the closed captioning and the script. So this is...
Maltz!
M-A-L-T-Z, Maltz. And then, again, they say Maltz again, except...
Malk!
He says Malk.
Malk?
Like Malk, like in The Simpsons, that episode of The Simpsons where they drink Malk instead
like
of milk.
Rich in vitamin R. Yeah, right.
Malk or whatever. Right, so first he says...
Maltz!
Milk.
And then he says...
Malk!
Which for some reason he switches to the Klingon version of Maltz to Malk or what? I don't know what was going on
there.
Does it
say that in the captioning?
No, it
as
doesn't.
Well?
I just can't.
Does it say Maltz in both times?
It says in the captioning and the script, it's Maltz both times. He's talking to Maltz. And then there's a third one.
I'm talking to Maltz.
Talking to Maltz. Hey, this guy's talking to Maltz.
You got the Maltz? Okay, then the third one is.
Malk!
And that just goes, Malk! Malk! Kumandu! Kumandu! Malk! So it goes from Maltz to Malk to Malk. More.
There's some inconsistency. They also say success, except it's not really kapla, right? It's something a little different.
Where's the damn antimatter inducer?
So it's a little premature.
Kapla. It's not kapla.
It's not kapla, or at least it's not clearly kapla. It doesn't seem to me that it's clearly kapla in this case. So there's still
it's
some
not clearly kapla.
Mm-hmm. I liked when McCoy is given the warning on the if we're like, yeah, we'll do some odds and ends here. Bits and boobs, odds and ends.
Bits and boobs.
Bits and boobs.
Is it bits and bobs? It's bits and bobs, not bits and boobs.
I don't think anyone says. Never heard that. No one says bits and bobs. Jesse, have you heard bits and bobs
never
or bits and boobs?
Never in my life.
I think I've said bits and bobs before.
I've said nooks and crannies.
Yeah, but I've asked you to not say that so often.
I used to think nooks and crannies were special, like little fudgies that were in the bread, but it actually means like the way the English muffin opens. It's got nooks and crannies. When I was like a wee youngin, I thought there was some kind of magic jam or something was what nooks and crannies. I thought nooks and crannies was some kind of weird jam. Because Thomas's English muffin, you open it, has nooks and crannies. Yeah. But it's referring to the topology, not like what's in it.
The texture.
Yeah.
So you're saying that
the
over.
Topology.
You're saying it over and over again. And you're
and ignoring your request.
And you were repeatedly miming the opening of an English muffin. Right. Just to be clear, what's going on here? What stage of this two-part conversation we're at?
Okay.
Oh no!
Free content, people. We provide you free content when we go on vacation. This is your free content. We're off having fun.
So
we're getting all schnitzeled up, and you motherfuckers have to listen to this.
If you were done with your point, I had one thing I wanted.
Oh, I was saying when McCoy is being warned, and then I just always liked that line delivery of DeForest Kelly when he was like, "I choose danger." I mean, that doesn't sound anything like him, but I like the way he said, "I choose danger."
He says,
"I choose the danger."
Right.
Which I like even better.
Yeah.
It's not like I choose danger generically. This script has really good grammar because it's like Kirk is like, you've killed my son. You have killed my son. McCoy is like, I choose the danger, as in this specific circumscribed danger, not danger as a generic concept.
There aren't going to be any damn permits.
I don't have the danger one, unfortunately.
I do like the damage permits. How do you
he
get
says permits?
Yeah, how do you get permits for doing a damned illegal thing?
he says permits, and Uhura says some line too. I can't remember what it is, but it's along the lines of instead of permit. Do you say Jesse Patrick? Do you say
hey?
Learners,
how's it going?
Do you say learner's permit or learner permit?
Learner's permit.
Permit.
I say permit too. And so
no one says permit.
Some people say permit. For example, McCoy said permit just
hey,
then.
Hey, he's got you there, Jesse. I'm afraid Dan has got you there.
Oh, no.
He just played the tape.
I played back the tape. Also, Uhura says, she doesn't say ambassador. She says ambassador. She says like ambassador.
Ambassador?
What did she say?
Ambassador.
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 I wish.
Good God, man.
I have in my notes that Kirk and Spock.
It's like ambassador. Ambassador. I think she says ambassador.
Kirk and Spock, when they're still on Genesis before they get beamed away, before Kirk is all like, Chewie! Chew! Kirk and Spock are like.
Genesis!
Oh, shit. Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
Genesis
I'm sorry.
Just got forgot because I mentioned Genesis. It means you have to play that tape.
I'm sorry.
I'm very sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
On Genesis, before they get beamed away, I said that Kirk and Spock are like Sam and Frodo on Mount Doom. They're all hugging each other, and there's all sorts of explosions and stuff. Except they don't think they're going to die, because Kirk is all like, I'm gonna call the Klingons. I'm going to trick them into... I'm going to trick John Larroquette into beaming us up. You notice Kirk is wearing like a weird pirate shirt?
Super Nintendo.
Like, why is he wearing that? Like, when he takes off his jacket, at a certain point, he's just wearing some crazy ass pirate shirt.
Yeah.
I liked it. I had nothing against it. It was just, it was not like the normal Kirk stuff. It was all poofy, swashbuckly.
Yeah.
The kind of thing I wish was in style currently.
I think
that's I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you were mentioning earlier, Jesse, that that Kirk was wearing some kind of.
Yeah, he had goofy civilian clothes. And it's funny that you said puffy shirt. That's a sort of a Seinfeld thing.
Right. Maybe Seinfeld got it from this movie.
There was a guy, the guy on the bridge in the beginning, and one of the trainee guys on the bridge was an actor that was in Seinfeld as Jackie Chiles.
Whoa.
And
he was also in that TOS episode, Miri, as a boy.
Yeah.
Which I wasn't a part of because I got COVID.
Oh, that's right.
But we did I was going to say that if I was there.
That's right. I remember that.
Anyway, I wasn't, so it doesn't matter.
And if my grandmother had wheels, she'd be a wagon.
For real, dude.
Mighty Morphin Gross Spock face.
I know. Oh, yeah.
We briefly touched on that.
Yeah,
before,
I said it was like Wolfman, but yeah, it was your same thing, though.
It was one of those things where I'm not saying it's bad that it's in the movie. It's kind of makes you think
a little excessive.
But yeah, it seemed sort of a little out of nowhere where I was like, oh my God, this is gross.
Yeah,
right. this movie is briefly gross, and then it's back to normal. It's just a good old Star Trek story. See, okay. That made me very uncomfortable.
That was Spock.
Another thing that I don't know why we just totally skipped over, skirted around, probably because it's just sort of depressing, but I think it's important to note in any discussion of Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, is the famous line... or famous exchange between Kirk and McCoy when they've beamed down to the planet and the Enterprise is just blown up, which, by the way, that sequence is just fucking mind-blowing and depressing when you think about it.
Oh, yeah, you know, that whole shot was awesome because... In a way, it wasn't necessary. Like, they didn't have to go through that whole... They could have just blown it up and moved on with it. But they had this very... They took their time to have
Like they're murdering the character we love.
Yeah, and then they sit there and they're pondering and watching it. And you get time to think about it and think about all the stuff you're doing. It was a great scene that, like... It was that they thought to add something like that. Because it was really effective.
I agree. And unlike David's death...
Oh, yeah.
Which was briefly effective and then sort of disappeared.
He's dead.
This lingers on, not just in this movie, but in the history of the lore of this particular crew. But Kirk and McCoy have that famous exchange where Kirk says, "My God, Bones, what have I done?"
Oh, yeah.
And McCoy says, "What you had to do, what you always do, turn death into a fighting chance to live."
Right.
You can debate how clever that line is or not, but it certainly has an impact. It's evocative.
My God, Bones, what have I done?
What have I done?
Have
again,
I done?
Yeah. The perfect cadence, the cadence that makes the line more than it is, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I always thought that was a fairly profound thing too, especially as a kid watching that. He destroyed the Enterprise. He had to, in his opinion, you know, that was what he had to do to save the day. But it was truly the last ditch thing. It's another thing that elevates Krug in terms of an antagonist, because none of the other antagonists made Kirk destroy the fucking ship. He was always able to save the ship. He might have lost a few people here and there. But Krug put him in a position where he had no choice. He had to scuttle the ship.
What you were saying, that line was one of the basic summations of the movie. It was when he was like, "But at what cost? Your ship, your son." And then Kirk says, "If I hadn't tried, the cost would have been my soul."
Yes.
Like, I think that's pretty thought-provoking. I thought that was a good summary of this. It gives a reason, a catalyst for the whole thing to happen. It's like it just had to happen.
I agree. And I think that ties together with that the good of the many outweighs
the
good of the one outweighs
and
the
that's
good
the
of
other
many.
Summation that I was cut to,
they're connected because Kirk, you know, again, so much religious imagery and religious language in this movie. Kirk refers to a soul. Does he believe in a soul in a more structured religious sense, or is he just referring it to his essence or whatever?
I think it's probably the latter.
But it's immaterial because the function is the same, at least in a literary sense. That he was saying that. He's not happy that these tragedies befell him, but that he had no choice. He had to make this attempt, even at the risk of his career and his life and these unexpected costs that he did not think he was going to lose the Enterprise. He did not think he was going to randomly lose his son to a fucking Klingon. Mm-hmm. These were not things he took on, right? And that's another sort of classic thing where it's like, okay, you're brave to take on an adventurous journey and you think you're risking X, Y, and Z. And through the journey is where you realize, oh, in fact, you're also risking 1, 2, and 3 whatever the appropriate coding is.
And because the episode the movie was so focused on one event, it's like the what have I done is kind of like everything went by in a blur, like in a flurry, and you're just like, wait a minute, what the fuck just happened? Yeah. So look at that way.
I think masterfully done, masterfully framed, another iconic shot from the movie and from Star Trek more generally. This movie is loaded with them, as underrated as it often is and as ignored as it often is. So many iconic things that impact the rest of the franchise happen right here in this film.
Some notes about the ship. The quarters, the hallways, are about like a third of the size of like TNG, the Enterprise D.
Well, they also...
They were pretty thin.
But they use these sets for TNG. TNG uses a lot of these sets redressed, though, and reformatted. And,
yeah. Okay, like, what we mostly see are wide-ass quarters in TNG, yeah, though. But so I'm not saying it's not the same set. I'm just saying that they use all this.
It's just it's fascinating what they can do with camera angles and stuff, and also just rebuilding sets.
I think it's a rebuilding. I think it goes beyond camera angles because I'm thinking particularly when they go to Spock's quarters and there's like there's no entry tape and they're like trying.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, 100%.
That scene looked like there was some pretty.
Oh yeah, quarters. There's absolutely some narrow.
And what was
action.
The deal with those security guys with the floopy red helmets and the uniform? Like
some hilarious uniform.
Yeah,
choices.
There were some kind of leather coif.
I'm actually I find it disappointing that from TNG onward. With very few exceptions, the non-Starfleet officer uniform game goes way down in Star Trek because it tends to just be everyone's wearing essentially a version of the Starfleet uniform or some variation on it. Occasionally you'll get like, oh, the scientist uniform, but it's nothing fun. It just looks like some overalls or some shit. It's not some goofy ass floppy hat with some weird piping, some thick ass piping and shit.
TOS had some like colorful weird. Yeah. I can't remember the episode, but we did an episode about it and it was, there was wearing some kind of, I think the whole ship was poisoned or something and they were wearing special suits and it was like these purple, red and yellow pipes that were like taped.
It was ridiculous.
It was totally
ridiculous.
Yeah.
We got to go back to having a little bit more ridiculous stuff.
It seemed like a bummer when the dude was like, everyone gets to go on shore leave. Except for you, Mr. Scott. You have to like stay and do some shit. Now, normally, Mr. Scotty would probably like to you know, work on a ship instead of go on shore leave.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like he had to do it on the Excelsior.
He wanted to work on the Enterprise. Yeah. And they were being sort of somewhat unceremonious when they're like, oh yeah, we're decommissioning the Enterprise. Don't even worry about it, Scotty.
Don't even worry about it.
Go hang out and help out the people over on that big fat Excelsior. Puffy Excelsior. Sexy.
At one point,
sexy
Kirk,
Excelsior.
Kirk comments on Scotty's estimation of how long it takes something to get fixed.
Yeah.
He says, he's like, do you take, what is he, he's like, do you take,
like, every, do you always quadruple your estimates?
Or something by a factor of three.
Yeah, because
or four.
He said it'll take 8 weeks, but he'll do it for you in two.
Yeah, it says, oh, here it
and
is.
And that's a gag that plays throughout and is referenced in Star Trek repeatedly in the future.
He says, have you always multiplied your repair estimates by a factor of four? Yeah. And then, there was the episode Relics in TNG, where LaForge goes, yeah, well, I told the captain I'd have this analysis done in an hour. And Scott says, how long will it really take? And he goes, an hour. He says, you didn't tell him how long it would really take, did you? And LaForge is like, of course I did. So that was like,
yeah.
So they're not even, yeah, they began like that joke.
Lower deck thing.
So they acknowledged that joke pretty early on in the TOS era. So, oh, I wanted to play, see if this music hit.
Horner's music in Star Trek 2 and 3, even though, yes, there's a lot of repetition between the two. I often have difficulty separating the two because I listen to these soundtracks on repeat together so much, so they intermingle. But there's a lot that's just, it's just so evocative. I think it's some of the best Star Trek music, the best matching of music to what's being conveyed on the screen.
This was
Star Trek, in my humble, tiny view.
This wasn't what I was referring to, about to talk about, but yeah, they reminded me of this.
Spock.
It's like a Western.
I have been and always shall be.
The harp in the background.
Your friend.
That's brilliant. I really like that part. Yeah. But the part that I was talking, that I was referencing, was I wanted to see if these sounded similar at all to you guys. So this is from Star Trek.
Yeah, I know what you're going to play.
This is from something else. There's a lot of noise
going on.
Yeah, Star Wars. But yeah, is that what you thought I was going to play?
Actually, no. I thought you were going to point out that James Horner steals from himself repeatedly throughout his career, going back to Alien and going up to Titanic and other shit like that.
I wasn't actually. I wasn't implying that he stole that from Star Wars.
He takes there are riffs in Star Trek 1 and 2 that are straight up lifted from previous movies and totally used again in other movies that came out the same year. Horner was famous for that.
Okay, I didn't know that,
but they work. he when he picks the things he uses, it usually works.
I guess they're not that similar to Star Wars, but for some reason this reminded me of that fight scene in Star Wars.
Like,
yeah.
Well, there's some jingles and jingling and jangling. What I like about
I don't think he ripped it off, and it's just, and Star Wars was inspired by the whole planet.
It's already a rip off.
That riff, exactly. But that riff you play just there is also one of another core memory, because it was the one used in the brilliant preview or teaser for Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, where they're projecting all sorts of scenes from Star Trek throughout history on the belly of the ship as it hoves into view and goes to warp. Yeah, anyway, I think we should do a whole podcast episode on Star Trek movie previews. We can go through and review all of them. I think that'd be fun.
That would be fun.
Yeah. Any other major points about Star Trek 3?
Nah.
I think it's about time we...
They had legit data tapes in this one. The one that
Valkyrie she flops it in all like gently and it sort of like falls
in. It's not a colored wooden block or plastic hunk or whatever it is.
I like the fact that there are a lot of, and we didn't get to all of them, but there are a lot of little things in this movie that
McCoy
make this world
suffering.
Feel...
McCoy is suffering from exhaustion, so they pump him full of tranquilizers. I thought that was gonna.
Yeah, they. But there's a lot of
practice.
There's a lot of things they do in this movie that make it feel lived in, and one of those is the implication that McCoy is a regular at that bar, at that goofy bar, because the waitress knows him, and she's like, "Do you want your usual poison?" And then, of course, it has the funny joke that he has. Interestingly, we didn't touch base at all on McCoy having Spock's brain, Spock's soul inside of him, and going crazy and goofy. We referenced some of the result of that. Probably not too much to discuss about that, other than interesting concept, probably passé in sci-fi now, but. Back then, the idea of two minds being shared in one head—you have that, and then you have the Steve Martin movie, The Man with Two Brains.
The Man with Two Brains.
Yeah.
Hey, wait, that's not what it's called, is it?
Yeah, The Man with Two Brains
with Lily Tomlin.
Yeah, isn't it The Man with Two Brains?
Is that what it's called?
I think it's The Man with Two Brains.
I'm gonna have to look that up. All right. Mean, I don't think you're lying.
Well, while you look that up, I will say all the closing down of the show.
No, it's stuff. All of me.
Yeah, the man with two brains. Look up the man with two brains.
Well, okay, the one I was thinking of with Lily Tomlin is All of Me.
Yeah. All of Me. Subtitle, The Man with Two Brains.
Well, there is a movie called The Man with Two Brains, yeah. But that's with Kathleen Turner.
Yeah, Kathleen Turner.
Okay, you're pulling Steve Martin. You're pulling a me from earlier, like last week or this week, or I don't remember which week.
All right. Whatever week it is in your neck of the woods, we hope you have derived some small amount of enjoyment out of this.
Maybe a little bit.
Super
zero.
Duper.
Zero.
fun episode. Oh, that's zero. Intense too.
Zero.
They have a lot of security on this. They spent a good 3.5-4 minutes entering in security codes.
Yeah,
while the music got higher and higher pitched, just marching up the octaves. So next week, or sometimes maybe even sooner than that, you'll be hearing our coverage, our embriefened coverage of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, episodes 2 and 3, and then back to our embiggened coverage of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, episode 4 embiggened. And beyond. So we look forward to that. In the meantime, of course, you can find us on social media everywhere at It's Got Star Trek, Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky Social, Mastodon, YouTube, Facebook. I think those are the main ones. We got them all out there.
Kirk's destruct sequence code was sequence Kirk said destruct sequence 1, code 1, 1A. Then yeah. Scott said sequence 2, yeah. Code 1, 1A, 2B. Yeah. So Scott's was kind of like Kirk's, except with a 2B added. Because Kirk said...
And then Chekhov's.
Code 1, 1A, Chekhov's, and then he said code 1, 1A, 2B.
Yeah, now read Chekhov's.
Destruct sequence 3, code 1B, 2B3. It's totally different.
I mean, it's not totally different. It's got the same flavor.
It's got the same flavor, but my point
is... threes in it, because he's the third in command.
But Kirk specifically says...
First in command.
Kirk specifically says code 1, 1A, and then Scott says code 1, 1A, 2B. And then Chekhov says...
Or not to be.
Code 1B, 2B, 3.
Yes.
You said that... Now say the third one, assuming that I knew what the third one was, and I did. With the Chekhov's code. You were like, now say Chekhov's. And I was like...
I have confidence in you as both a scholar of Star Trek and as a podcasting partner.
And an obsessive.
That too. All right. Anyway, you know, it's got StarTrek.com, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like our show, review our show, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we will talk to you. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Sometimes. Whether I get paid off.
I don't know. All right. Bye-bye.
Self-destruct in 20 seconds. This is your last chance to push the cancellation button.
Cancellation button? Hurry!
Where is it? Where is it?
It's gotta be here.
Out of order!
Fuck! Even in the future, nothing works!
This ship will self-destruct in exactly 10 seconds. Counting down. 10. 9. 8, 6.
6! What happened to 7?
Just kidding.